Book exam will be on Sunday instead of Saturday. And then there will be no lunch prasadam on Sunday. Mid time, same time, almost 12 o'clock. Maybe because devotees want it on, they want a gap.
One more announcement, the sloka testing will go on until Sunday.
What's going on Tuesday?
Sloka testing.
Okay, we're on on ninth chapter. I've given a file to, remind me your name?
Thomas.
I've given a file to Thomas. If you want a copy of that file, it's a file. You'll find out. It's a class from last year on one of the verses that we'll talk about today. It's a better class than I'm going to give today. So you can get it from Thomas by barraging him with your keys, or if you've got a laptop and he still has keys, you can get it from him. You can get one of the keys rather than quite a few of that. Okay, I'll tell you this. Class on Apichet Sudurachado Bhajatayamala. If you don't get it today, you can download it from my website. But anyway, I'll tell you about that when we get to the verse. But for those who have keys and debating whether or not they should copy it. Okay, we're on ninth chapter. Ready to go here? And watch your health. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Vidam Tute, Gunandaman, Prasasham, Sudhade, Yadam Vigyan Sanidam, Yajadva Moksha Seshva, Raja Vidya Raja Gunam, Prabhupada Vidam Vatam, Prasasham, Ramaharyam, Susumam, Prabhupadam, Ashashadhanam, Shasha,
Satan Kirtayan Toma, Vietnam, Chester, Pirata,
Faster than me today? Whoever was chanting faster than me, you want to lead tomorrow? No? You want to follow tomorrow?
Yes.
If you don't follow, you'll find yourself leading, as you did today.
I don't have to work at keeping up with someone else leading in my own class. I won't do it. If you want to pick a day to cross me, pick another day. It's already off to an evil start. Before I came in, by the way. Not to okay. I saw a blessing from a Christian priest the other day. He blessed his congregation that whoever, he was a bishop, in fact, I think. Anyway, senior priest. And whoever's cell phone went off during his sermon would be damned to live in an eternal lake of fire.
It's a benediction.
That was a benediction, yeah.
Pardon the acting people.
So, I'm starting to collect those kind of benedictions for use in Krishna's service. Watch out. Your cell phones are off, aren't they? We are in the ninth chapter. We did briefly discuss Patram Kutram Palam Poyam. Yes, was that a question? No, it's just a hand. And we're not going to go deep into that verse. Your assessor is going to go deep into it, but I'm not going to go deep into it because it's so widely discussed in the normal classes that you attend to the temples. Yat karoshi yat ashnashi yat juhosi didasi yat tat kuru shamadarpanam tat kuru yat tapasyasi kronti yat tat kuru shamadarpanam. That's another verse I'm not going to go into detail on because it's so widely discussed. Everything should be done for Krishna.
All right.
Yes.
Can we ask questions about them or no?
You can ask questions, yeah, we'll take a question or two.
In the lecture book that we received, Prabhupada identifies 9.6 with Karma Yoga.
I think
they gave us a compilation of Prabhupada quotes dealing with the verses that he lectured on.
Well, these are all things. That's also found, I think, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they'll categorize things differently. I had people in a previous class more or less driving me crazy or driving themselves crazy with trying to categorize what verse belongs to what. It depends how you look at it. That's really the conclusion. If it's Monday, you can look at it as Bhakti Yoga. If it's Tuesday, you can look at it as Nishkam Karma Yoga. If it's Wednesday, you can look at it another way.
And Bhakti mentioned twice in that verse. I mean, what is this karma stuff?
Yeah. Well, the idea is, the reason that it's discussed in relationship to Karma Yoga or Nishkam Karma Yoga and so on is that essentially you're not just saying, okay, what does Krishna want? And doing that, you're saying, what am I doing that I can offer to Krishna? That's why.
Okay, you start with you instead of Krishna.
It starts with you. It says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, now do it for Krishna. So it's essentially starting with your own chosen activities, what you want to do or what you're doing, rather than starting with what Krishna wants out of you. Can we have a chair, please, for voting on that? So from that point of view, it's looked at as karma yoga, taking your karma and your activities and connecting them with Krishna. That's the yoga part. Whereas at the higher platform of pure devotional service, it's no longer about what I'm doing, it's about what Krishna wants me to do. Is that okay? Can you just hand that up so he doesn't have to journey to the Shrek? Thank you.
You want the lights off, by the
way? Well, it saves money. You can all see me well enough, right? Can you see anything else you need to see well enough, or do you need light? If you want light, we'll turn some on.
It's a little dark from reading the book.
Okay, give them. Let there be.
Electricity is off.
In the words of God, let there be light.
Oh, okay, yeah, the lights are on.
And in the words of the God of Mayapur.
The company's God. The company's God, no power.
Well, in Mayapur, when I want you to have light, you'll have it. I don't want you to have it, you won't have it. Or maybe God of Mayapur says, let there be light sometimes. And there sometimes is light. Okay. By the way. Just for your information, there were a whole batch of purports missing in Prabhupada's original manuscript, starting with text 16 and going up to 21 or something. So I wrote to Prabhupada and said, purport, there are no purports to these verses. Do you want to write purports? So Prabhupada dictated purports and sent them to me. 1971, when we were working on the first edition of the movie. I think there were no word-for-word meanings either, and they were put in by the Sanskrit guys. That's my recollection. But in any case, probably did write purports. Okay, that was just going backwards. Shubha-shubha-palayar-evam moksha-seri-karma-vandhanayam sannyasa-yoga-yukta-atma vimukto-mam. Upai Shasi. What does Shubha mean?
Auspicious.
Auspicious. What does auspicious mean?
Fortune.
So there's auspicious and inauspicious work, or auspicious and inauspicious results of work. And Krishna says, Mokshase Karma Bandhana. You'll be free from the bondage to all of these activities or all this work, auspicious and inauspicious. What's the bondage to inauspicious work? To auspicious work?
Piety.
Yeah, well, what's the bondage?
To go to heaven. Come back to material.
Yeah, you have to go to heaven. To go to heaven and enjoy, you have to take birth again. And Dhruva, Jatasi, Dhruva, Mrityur. For one who's taken birth, death is certain. So that's the benefit of pious activities. You have to take birth again on the higher planets and then come back down. So that's undesirable. For the karmis, it's desirable, but for the intelligent person, not.
Is it possible to perform pious activities in the heavenly planets and further go?
Generally not.
Huh?
Generally not. Generally not. The karma kshetra, the place where pious and impious activity or pious and impious results are gained, is Earth. In the higher planets, you use up your punya, and in the lower hellish planets, you use up your pap. Yes.
So does this mean that the conclusion of other scriptures is to by living entities to take them to heaven and again come back?
Conclusion of?
There are some scriptures that just recommend that people should engage in certain activities and go to heaven.
Yeah.
So that's the conclusion. You must go to heaven and come back.
That's the conclusion. That's what happens. Yeah, they go and come back. In the Vedas, that's there. We were reading that. Surendra Lokam, Ashnanti Divyan, Divideva Pogan. They go to Indraloka. And they enjoy, as a result of their pious activities described in the Vedas, Tam Imam Pratitam Vacham. And then, Kshine Punye Marcha Lokam Vichanti. They use up their pious activities and come back down. in other, well, everybody gets comparative in this class. Everybody wants to do a comparative religion thing. But anyway, when you read other scriptures, sometimes you hear descriptions about going to heaven and enjoying, basically. You get all sorts of, you know, he's gone to his last reward. You go there and you get rewarded. In some religious organizations, they pass out little tracts and booklets showing that you've gone to heaven and your wife is there, or your little dog is there, or your little house with the white picket fence is there. It's hard to distinguish heaven from hell. In other religious traditions, it seems that you'll have a lot of consorts up there. Anyway, it's generally heaven is described in some circles as a place of enjoyment. And in the Vedic literature, it's described as a place of enjoyment. But the ultimate destination, Tadbhama Paramamama, is the abode of God, the abode of Krishna, where the engagement is not our own enjoyment, but giving enjoyment to God. I'm sure other religious traditions have such ideas also. They're not usually front and center, at least in popular culture, popular religious culture. Don't want to say anything about deep religious culture because I don't know too much about deep religious culture. Yes.
So when it is stated that you come down to Earth, is that specifically this planet here, or there's a plane?
Marchaloka. Shine punye marchaloka vishanti. Marchaloka means Earth again.
But is this planet or many other, or a dimension of Earth planets? I mean,
well, it doesn't, Sariputta didn't write Bhagavad Gita, so it doesn't talk about multi-dimensional vectors and all that kind of stuff. It just says you come back down to Marchaloka. Marchaloka is taken to be Earth, Prabhupada says, come back down to this Earth planet. Okay, there's a Bhumandala planetary system where there are other things going on. That's also considered to be Earth from one angle of vision. The different varshas of Earth that you find in the fifth canto. Whether that's part of the same business, I have to think about it. And you can come back down and find yourself in another varsha other than Parivarsha. But the residents of the heavenly planets are praying that if there's any remnant of our pious activity left when our time is up, then let us take birth in Bharatvarsha. Because Bharatvarsha is the place for performing pious activities or spiritual activities and which to go back to God. Bharatvarsha is taken to be the earth. Although, of course, it can also be taken to be India. Yes?
But Gopkumar going, the brother of from planet to planet.
Gopkumar? Yeah, he's going from planet to planet. He actually goes twice. One time he goes planet to planet, and the other time he says, forget all these planets, he just hops on an airplane and goes straight to Vaikuntha. That's described in the second canto. There are two kinds of yogis, those who just directly set their sights on the transcendental world, and those who want to do some sightseeing in the material world before they go. So Gopkumar did both. Not exactly sightseeing. He was more serious than that, but he did a lot of stopping off at the main destinations along the line. But then the second time he just zipped past all those destinations that he'd spent so much time with. And people just waved as he moved on. Is that okay? Something else about this. Shubha Shubha Palayar Evam Moksha Se. You'll be freed from the results not only of your bad karma, but of your good karma. Because good or bad karma, it's all bad. What's that verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita? Meaning? Someone else know the verse? You know.
I know.
Means. Tell us what it means.
That some people may say that this is auspicious or that is inauspicious, but that is all a concoction of the mind. It is all bad.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Mando, this is good, this is bad. Hey, Sabram, this is all nonsense. Dvaite, in the material world, Padra Jan, hey, Mano Dharma. This is good, this is bad, it's all mental concoction. It's all bad in the material world. Prabhupada's favorite example. Yep.
Dry stool and wet stool.
The wet stool is laughing at the dry stool, saying, you're all dried up, and they're going to throw you in the fire. But the wet stool is going to get thrown in next. Or from the one point where the other way probably tells it is that people are passing through the, they're walking someplace in the fields, but they're being very careful to walk in places where the stool is dry rather than where the stool is wet. Probably said dry stool and wet stool, it's wet stool. Okay. Sannyasa yoga yukta atma vimukto mam upaishasi. Being connected to me with sannyasa yoga, meaning is explained actually below by Rupa Goswami, anasaktasya vishayam, yataraham upaimanvrita. Nirvanda Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya. To use everything in Krishna's service without attachment to sense gratification is actually Yukta Vairagya. Yes. Does it mean that same thing? I don't understand how I'm supposed to think about that. Does it mean the same thing? It shares some territory, but what do you mean, does it mean the same thing? You mean, is the meaning identical? Others?
Is it considering your devotional service that the devotee is engaging in different Krishna's service and also according to this verse, the accuracy also engaging.
I don't think I understand the question. Seems like you're thinking in some sort of categories that you're trying to fit things into, and I don't think I understand the categories. Let's take two first thing first. This verse does not mean the same thing as the other verse. They're two different verses. Different verses have different meanings. Just as I'm not you and he's not you and you're not the next guy, even though you share similar features, you know, you're all men, you're all human beings, you're all Vaishnavas, you're all here, but he's not you, you're not him, and so on. So these verses are related, but they are not identical. Otherwise, they'd be the same. Now, by the way, here's, for those who want to take a snapshot of it, here's the nice page without that verse from Rupa Goswami. For those of you who like it more, can order it, but you fail the class. So these verses are similar. And Prabhupada invokes the verse from Rupa Goswami to further draw out points that we should understand
from this verse of Bhagavad Gita. Verse about Bhagavad Gita is about sannyas yoga, yukatma, that's mentioned, to be connected with Krishna and to be detached. And so Prabhupada refers to this other verse by Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami explains what it is to be detached. The Mayavadis will say, detached means detached. You're only linked to the Absolute, and everything else is mine. What's that verse? Also Rupa Goswami? This is Phagu Vairagya, dry renunciation. To reject things that are related to Krishna out of fear, really, I'm going to get entangled by having something to do with them. Prabhupada gave the example of the Mayavadi sannyasi who's so pure that when you offered him money, his hand would go like that behind his back, just automatically, you know, he'd give him money. Because he was so pure that these material things couldn't even touch him. Prabhupada said, if you offer me money, my hand goes like that. We'll accept it for Krishna. That's dry renunciation. The thing has some utility in Krishna's service, and we're saying, oh, this is all Maya. Why Maya? It's Krishna's energy. It should be used for Krishna. But when we use it for Krishna, anasaktasya visha, we have to be unattached to sense gratification. It's not all just dovetailing and enjoying. It's using it for Krishna's service with detachment, without interest in sense gratification. That's yukta vairagya. It's vairagya because you're detached, and it's yukta because you're using everything in Krishna's service. Does that help? Is it okay? I'm not giving you too much of a hard time. Good. Otherwise, I fail, of course. Yes.
I was just a couple of weeks ago in Govardhan. There is one samadhi of one famous sainted person there, and just near to our ashram. Mm-hmm. And there is the saying, it's the inscription that don't put money, don't put clothes, cloth only leave two tiers of separation. Now, we could say, this is not our mood, you know. People should give money or goods. But in another way, sometimes also the devotees are in that mood that we don't want anything from the people except their sincere service. Or, yeah.
Yeah. The mood is like Madhavendra Puri. For the service of Gopal, he was ready to walk halfway across India, carrying valuable stuff through cacoid-infested trails. But for his own sense gratification, he wouldn't even beg something to eat. If it came, it came. If it didn't, it didn't. So that there's an example, Yukta Vairagya, totally connected with Krishna. And for Krishna's service, he could do anything, use anything. But for his own enjoyment, no need. Okay, anything else here? There is another point that I wanted to make, and that is that Prabhupada mentions that the person who's engaged in Krishna consciousness, he doesn't give serious attention to the fruit of activities or prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. Those activities are very important for the karmis or for the honest, fruitive workers who are leading a religious life, a pious life. But a devotee is not very much interested in all that kind of stuff. He's interested in serving Krishna, and not so interested in all the rituals of the Vedic way of life. So it seems that a person completely engaged in the service of the Lord may appear to go against the prescribed Vedic duties. But actually, it's not so. There's a quotation from Madhavendra Puri also, while we're on Madhavendra Puri. It says, this was also misedited in the original. It says, my morning prayers, I offer my obeisances to you. My rituals and all of that, I offer my obeisances to you. And see you later, I'm just going to go serve Krishna. That's
paraphrasing loosely, but that's basically what he says, you know. All glories to you, obeisances to you, and please excuse me if I'm not really going to do anything with you. I'm busy with Krishna service. I don't really have much interest in Vedic rituals anymore. Anything else? Yes?
You mentioned the excesses of dovetailing. I think about this verse, you know, Yukta Vairagya Muchite, sometimes it's very, it's sort of tossed off very lightly.
Mm-hmm.
We can use everything in Krishna service, Prabhu, but that's only, utility is really only the principle as far as purity is the force. Because we've seen it's not easy to be anasakta
sivishaya. Yeah. That's not everybody's favorite part of the verse, anasakta sivishaya.
Yeah.
Detached from sense certification. Prabhupada could use everything in Krishna's service because it wouldn't cause him a problem. We may not be able to use everything so well. So we have to cultivate that sense of detachment. And also keep our little distance for things that we're going to get entangled in,
mm-hmm.
because we don't know how to use them properly. We don't have the adhikar to use them properly.
So you are saying we should practice two things. One is the how to engage everything in Krishna's service, and other is also some stages that we decrease our attachment, material attachment. This is what you say?
Our material what?
Material
attachment. There's two things, and one of them is Krishna's service, and the other is decreasing material attachment.
Yeah, is this what you are saying?
Well, I'm saying that to serve Krishna purely, we have to do so without attachment. Pure devotional service means jnana karmajnavita. That's not for my sense gratification. There is devotional service mixed with my own interest in sense gratification. That's called mixed devotional service. Pure devotional service is anasaptasya vishaya, vishaya chariya, giving up sense gratification, shayarasya majiya, mukhebaloha, chanting Hare Krishna without any attachment to sense gratification. That's pure devotional service. Does that answer your question? I'm not quite sure what your question is.
I'm talking about the level of practice, not of the level of theory. I'm talking about the practical.
Yeah, but what do you want to know about the practical?
The practical, should we practice constraining ourselves?
I hope we will. I hope we'll practice constraining ourselves. We have, for example, no intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no messing around. I hope we will practice those things. It does require some constraint, some restraint.
But further than this?
There are other things too. There are other things that, you know, we'll come to it later. Bad mouthing Vaishnavas is something you can do if you want at your own mortal risk. But we're advised to restrain ourselves from such things. Dhitaraga Vayakrota, to control attachment, fear, and anger. Trividam narakasyedam svaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodha tata lobhas. Lust, anger, and greed we are advised to control. And it's not that when you join ISKCON you sort of pass through a little device and now you no longer have lust or anger or greed. You recognize some traces still left. So those things we have to control. Best control is positive. You chant Hare Krishna and you're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they just disappear. But on the practical field, since you asked about the practical field, there may be times when you recognize that they haven't quite disappeared. And since they haven't quite disappeared, we better be careful about them. Susie comes by and says, "Prabhu, that was such a great lecture that you gave today. You know, I just love to hear your lectures." And your mind starts to spin. Well, you know, that's the time when you need to control your mind. And, of course, controlling doesn't mean just stopping the mind. It means remembering Krishna. Yeah, I just repeat stuff that I heard from other people who I directed. And, gotta call it. Is that okay?
Okay.
Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshyoski na priyaha ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayi te teshu tapyaha. It's a very important verse and sweet verse also. This is elaborated quite extensively in Srimad Bhagavatam. What canto is it? Sixth canto? In connection with the killing of Shishupal, if I'm not wrong. There's a whole section called Krishna is equal to everyone in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it seems, I think the question is Yudhisthira Maharaj's, if I'm not wrong, it seems that Krishna favors some people and acts inimically toward others. And there in the Bhagavatam it's discussed that no, Krishna is equal to everyone. Whatever he does, he's good to everyone. If he kills you, that's also good. That's also his favor. Krishna is equal, but yayatamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyam. Do you see that verse quoted in the purport?
Yes.
You do. Gee, too bad you don't have the first edition. You could be reading instead. Asti na priyaha ye bhajanti. Which of course is from the verse itself, text 29. You could be seeing that instead. And if you're really pious, you could be thinking, this is what Prabhupada wanted there. So the actual thing is, Krishna's reciprocal. You want me this way, I'll reciprocate with you that way. You want me another way, I'll reciprocate with you that way. You want to be friendly toward me, I'll be your friend. You want me as an enemy? Okay, I'll be your enemy. You're running Kashyapu, you want an enemy? I'll be your enemy. You have a problem, you don't have a good enough enemy? I'm there for you. Vrikasura had that problem. He got a benediction from Lord Shiva that he got so many arms. And he said, you know, I've got all these arms, there's nobody I can fight with. There's no match. I just get so frustrated I go around and I just smash a mountain or two with all my 1,000 arms. So what kind of benediction is this? Lord Shiva said, don't worry, you'll meet someone. So Krishna was kind enough to cut him down to size. He was very kind to him. He gave him 4 arms. He cut off 1,000 arms minus 4 and left him Vaikunthavani, essentially. You know, 4 arms. Krishna was so kind. So this is Krishna. He has no enemies and no friends. But ye bhajanti, those who worship me, tumam bhaktya, in devotional service. Mayite, they're in me and I'm in them. Mayite, teshu chandrama. Sadhava vridhyam mayam. Sadhava vridhyam tvaham. I'm in the hearts of the sadhus are in my heart. They don't know anyone but me, I don't know anyone but them. This is the nature of the Lord. You go out in the sun, you'll get the benefit of the sunshine. Come in here and close all the doors and windows and curtains and you'll be in the dark. And then you can sit here and say, you know, the sun's unfair. It doesn't come in. It doesn't like me. you swallow the sun. You go out in the sun, you'll get the full benefit of the sunshine. It's not that the sun likes some people and doesn't like others. It shines everywhere. But now you want it or you don't want it. The Krishna's mercy is like that. There are those who are not interested in Krishna. Krishna is not especially interested in that. Or there are those who are inimical. Krishna reciprocates. He's compared to the air. Birds are flying at different heights. And it's not because the wind says, you know, I like the big birds. I like the big birds. I'm going to give them a higher position. The wind is equal. It's the birds that are bigger. Wind is the same to everyone. The air is the same to everyone. It's you. So as one ye bhajanti tu mam bhakti, one surrenders to Krishna or approaches Krishna in devotion, and Krishna says, come on. And he reciprocates. That's not partiality as a flaw. It's not partiality as a flaw. It's just reciprocation. You approach me, I'll deal with anyone. It's a question of how you approach me. That's Krishna. Any questions? Yes.
Mr. John Maharaj used to say that he once went to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, you're so merciful to me. And Prabhupada said, no, my mercy is for everybody, simply you're taking.
There you are. There you are. There's a nice statement in the middle of the purport. The very phrase, Krishna consciousness, suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists, situated in Him. The Lord here distinctly says, Maite, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This explains those words not found here. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, Vrijan Prabhu writes that Baldev Devotion, he gives this explanation that among all the natures, none are my enemies and none are especially dear to me. None are especially dear to me. But if you see 7.17, there Krishna says that devotees are very dear to him.
You're also, he says. I'm equal to everyone, but you don't have to go back to 7th chapter. You can find it right here. Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone, but I'm more equal to my devotees. I'm equal to everyone, but I favor my devotees. Yes?
So Krishna consciousness is the perfect communism. Some are more equal than others.
Yeah. Why? If he says he's equal to everyone, why does he favor the devotees?
Just trying to understand once in one hand he says that I'm equal to everyone.
Yeah. And then he says I favor the devotee. So how is that equal to everyone?
That's what I'm trying to understand.
Who can explain?
Because the devotee depends on Krishna.
Devotees are?
Dependent on Krishna.
Dependent on Krishna. Yeah? Yes, true.
Prabhupada gives the example of the father, the children of the next door and his own children. He's very close to
He favors his own children. That's Prabhupada said that's not partiality, that's natural.
Everyone has a chance to become a devotee.
Everyone has a chance to become a devotee.
The Lord simply reciprocates.
He's simply reciprocating. He's equal. You love me, I'll love you. Don't want to love me? Okay, you're out.
Still I supply you.
It's not partiality. You want to love me, I'll reciprocate with you. You don't want to love me? Okay, I got a lot of other people to reciprocate with. The sun. You want reciprocation? You want to go out in the sun and get some sunshine? Fine. Sun is ready for everyone. Want to stay in here and be cold? Okay. Make it clear?
Yes. We let. We are there with him, but we choose to let.
Yeah, this is of course a big discussion, but yes, we vichetasa. Vichetasa means vimokachetasa. Turning our face away from Krishna. As soon as you, same thing, Prabhupada gave the example one time I was there. He said, just like your palm, you turn your palm this way, it's in the sun. Turn it this way, it's in the darkness. In the light or it's in the darkness, that's up to you. You turn toward Krishna or you turn away from Krishna.
Do you feel
you
have the intelligence to...
Excuse me?
Do you feel you have the intelligence and they know how to catch the mercy?
The devotees have the intelligence.
To catch mercy?
Yeah, Krishna gives the intelligence.
Yeah.
I give the intelligence. Something else? Yes?
When Prabhupada asked that question, I was thinking the other way. What if Krishna was the same in a kind of bland sense? No matter how you approached him, he was the same.
Yeah.
That's impersonal.
What a drag. Gopis come, we want to dance with you. Sorry, I'm equal to everyone. We want to play with you. No, sorry, I'm equal to everyone. We want to fight with you. No, sorry. My job is just to stand here and be equal. Somebody who's equal amidst... You send those kind of people to for professional help. It's called lack of affect, right? No matter what, you know, the person kind of goes.
That's why Bhakti Siddhanta liked it when Prabhupada wrote absolute essential.
Yeah, essential.
Essential. It's feeling.
Yeah.
It's alive.
Krishna reciprocates. He's not a stone. Mm-hmm. Stones are equal to everyone also, but not the same way. Anything else here? Yes.
Comment? The example that he gave in terms of Prabhupada, give an example of the father having to have a different relationship with his kids and then the people in general. So if we use that example, take for instance, if I'm in charge of a temple or a monastery and I have wife and children, and then I can also use that example that Prabhupada gave this example that at least it's natural that after. So what's wrong with that?
It's rather a crude example, isn't it? It's just to help us understand that, well, person's equal to everyone, but still he gives special attention to his children. You can say he's more affectionate, or you can just say it's his duty. He has to give more attention to his, you know, his children or his wife. You know, so many women may want this or that. But when his wife wants something, he has to give some attention because it's his wife. Or when she needs something, he has to give attention because it's his wife. Even if he's detached, he still has to say, well, she's my wife, I'm responsible here. You know, the other women, kind of go to somebody else with their problem, but this one I'm responsible for. So I have to reciprocate. I don't have to reciprocate with all the girls on campus, but with my wife, I owe her something. I have to reciprocate here. Yes.
So you're going the same thing because the wife and the children depending on him.
That's right.
He has.
Yes. Your point is this: they're dependent. Prabhupada gives the example of the child out of so many children. You know, one is always crying for the mother. That child gets more attention, not because the mother is partial, but because this is the kid. You know, what do they say? The squeaky wheel gets the oil. Right.
What do you say? It's something like a bank account. If you just take a deposit 10,000 rupees, you can only take out 10,000. You can't take out 10. The level of
Krishna.
If you deposit 10,000 rupees in the bank, then you go, you can't take out 20.
However much you deposit, that's how much you can withdraw. So similarly,
what you give to Krishna is what you receive.
What you give to Krishna is what you receive. Yeah, to a certain extent, you know, those who give less receive less. Those who give more receive more. But this bank is a really good bank. You can withdraw more than you can, than you deposit, and they don't charge interest and screw you. Most banks, you can withdraw more than you deposit, but then they own your body, soul, and soul for the rest of your life. But this bank, that is to say, when you give to Krishna, Prabhupada said, if you take one step to Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps with you. So he's more eager than we are to be engaged in this relationship. So that if you, therefore Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Pam, even you give me a little water, I'll reciprocate. You know, don't, okay, you don't have any money, you don't want to spend, somehow you're going to give me a little water, I'll take that. Let's just have some reciprocation here. I'll take some water, I'll take a flower, a leaf. Just let's have a little give and take. Let's have some devotion going on here. But he's more eager. Anything else?
I was just one of the quality of Krishna is grateful.
Yeah, he has gratitude, he appreciates it. Somebody
like,
renders some service.
Draupadi called Krishna, and Krishna immediately was thinking how to reach out to her, you know. So he was so grateful that she called.
Yeah, just she called out, oh, Govinda, with great feeling. So he felt, okay, I have to help. Gratitude.
When Krishna says leaf, does he mean the tulsi leaf or just any leaf?
Well, even sometimes, even if you don't have anything else, just offer a leaf to Krishna. Sometimes we saw in the very beginning of the movement, people would offer some, you know, whatever they had. All right, something. He's offered some, the famous example, someone drunkard came in and offered some toilet paper on the altar. Prabhupada said he's begun his service. So, yeah, it's not that if, you know, you're in off in China or someplace, there are no tulsi plants. I'm sorry, I only accept tulsi leaves. Go to hell. No, whatever. If you even offer a simple leaf, we gave the example yesterday. Krishna was eating banana peels because a pure devotee was offering. Or Sanatana Goswami is offering this bhati, means just chapati dough cooked in, thrown in the fire. And no salt even. But Krishna was accepting because it was offered with love. So, especially tulsi leaf, as Acharya's mentioned here. But the main thing is your love. Okay, we have reached our break time. We shall break for 10 minutes. And people who are going ahead.
Knowledge. The principle, the highest
most
Thank you.
So it's time to start. Where are we now?
14 degrees. 14 degrees.
So we're just about there.
No, it's the coldest time is January 15. That's when
January
15
is the shortest day.
It's Mahasankranti. That's when the new year starts, and then summertime starts.
So we're January 15th, so we're getting there.
About 2 weeks more.
Right, because that's when that is.
That's when the sun is the farthest away.
And it's also when they have that.
It's a festival, yeah.
Ganga Sagara on that
day. Yeah. Then will be in Samasa, sometimes before, it's around 15 or
so. I will take Vaishnavi. And the Bengal people play kites. Bengal.
It's the New Year, right? The New Year.
Different places people play kites on that day.
Gujarat.
Big day for kite flying. In Bengal, they make a certain kind of sushi. Sachi Matame is shaped in the water. Okay. We are again starting, that is to say, we are resuming. It all happens again. Okay. We come to the next verse. DJ Sudaracharo Vajate Mam Ananyapa Sadhureva Samantavya Samyag Vyavasito Visa. So last year I gave a class on this topic, which you, I guess you call a hot class. Those of you who have computers or memory sticks, you've got copies? Yeah? Those who... have memory sticks or, and didn't bring them, you can bring them tomorrow, and I'm sure that Tomas will be happy to give you a copy. Alternatively, you can download it from my website, jswami.info, www.jswami.info, and you will see the lecture there under the title, Don't Badmouth Sadhus. Seems to be pretty hot in the sense that about 1,400 downloads have got filed so far, which for my little site is fairly substantial downloads. Don't badmouth sadhus. That's the title. And at the moment it's on my front page. Okay, we'll give you the full URL. That's the full address for that item. Otherwise, you should. At the moment, it's on the front page. The way things happen, they drop off the front page onto the next page. But you can always find it at that page, which, gee, is really small, where I wrote it, isn't it? Anyways, the words are don't badmouth sadhus with underscores between the three words.
That's the
Apiche
article?
That's the Apiche article, but it's an MP3 file, so you can't read it. That's the one that Tomas and others have. So if you have a memory stick or a computer or something, you can engage in file sharing. That's fine. Or you can say, can I borrow your computer? And you can sit and listen if you like. It lasts about 35 minutes. And it says most of the things that I would want to say about this verse, which doesn't mean I'm not going to say something today, but it means that I probably would say as much, as strongly as I said. But it's a good download. Share it with your friends. And needed, the topic needs what's the word? Attention. You know, like a bad knee or something needs attention. A sick child needs attention. This topic needs attention because even sometimes among our advanced members, we just don't get it. So, spread the word, okay? Unless you don't like it, you know? But even then, if you don't like it, spread the word. That's what everybody does.
Bad mom. Bad mom to bad mom.
Yeah, bad mom. Right. Just add another underscore and add bad mouth. Yeah.
Good mouth.
Yeah. Don't good mouth, bad mouth the sadhus or something. Okay. We will now come to the actual subject matter. This follows from what Krishna has just said. I'm equal to everyone, but some people I'm more equal toward. I'm especially inclined toward my devotees. I'm in their hearts, so they're in my heart. They don't know anyone but me, so I don't know anyone but them. There's this tight, loving relationship between Krishna and his devotees. So now Krishna says that even if such a devotee does something terrible, achar means proper behavior, and durachar, and sudurachar,
very bad,
terrible behavior. Api means api chait, even if he's a person who commits sudurachar, bhajate mam ananyapa, but he engages in my service steadfastly, ananyapa. Sadhureva, samantavya, he must be considered a sadhu. And Prabhupada comments that this word, these words are emphatic. Sadhur eva. Eva means definitely, must, certainly. Not if you like, you can consider him, you must. Mantavya, he is to be considered a sadhu. Eva. In all ways, definitely. Samyak vyavasita, he, there's he, it's another intensifier. Eva, he. He is situated properly in his determination. So if you, so you have to consider him a sadhu. Prabhupada speaks about this. He quotes from the Nrisimha Purana that even if there's some spots on the moon, still, the moon is the moon. You don't badmouth the moon just because it has spots on it. There's something about the rabbit on the moon. The moon is, in the West, we see a man on the moon. In India, they see a rabbit on the moon. The moon is called Shashi, from Shasha. Shasha means rabbit. So Shashi is the planet that has a rabbit on it. So Shashi, the moon. Even though it has some spots on it that might look like a rabbit, we don't say, oh, the moon's got spots. We appreciate the abundant moonlight. So even if a devotee shows some deviation in character, Krishna says he has to be considered a sadhu. And there we will pick up Purujan Prabhu's book. Who has a copy? This is, you'll hear it again if you listen to the file, but you may not do that right away. Well, he comments on two verses together, so we'll read the second one also. Chipram bhavati dharmatma shashvach chantim nigashkati kauntiya pratijani hi nane bhaktapanashti. It's not that you can just go on doing any nonsense. Say, well, I'm a sadhu. The real sadhu very quickly comes back to the standard. Dharmatma, shashvach, chipram. Chipram means quickly. Chipram bhavati dharmatma. He quickly comes back to the standard. All right, he did something abominable, but then he regrets it. And he thinks, no, I've done the wrong thing. And he comes back very quickly to the standard. That's a real devotee. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on these verses. One might ask, but if someone is corrupted by such bad behavior, how can he be a sadhu? This is answered. He should be considered as such and thought of as a sadhu. He should be considered, that's mantavya, is an injunctive statement. It's an order. If this injunction is disobeyed, there will be unfavorable consequences. In other words, the evidence for the truth of this is that it is simply my command. Well, someone might say, one may be considered a sadhu partially, to the extent that he's worshipping you, but to the extent that he's usurping other men's wives and property, he's not to be considered a sadhu. This is answered by the word eva, only. He should only be considered a sadhu in all ways completely. We should never view him as not a sadhu. His determination is completely fixed. I may go to hell or obtain an animal birth because of my unavoidable sinful reactions, but I will never give up my exclusive worship of Sri Krishna. Such determination is praiseworthy. But, one might ask, why do you accept the worship of such an irreligious person? Why do you consume the food and drink offered by one whose heart is contaminated by lust, anger, and other faults? In response, the Lord says, he quickly becomes religious. This is not expressed as he is going to quickly become, or he will soon achieve peace. Rather, the present tense is used. He becomes. He attains. The Lord continues, this means that immediately after he commits impiety, he remembers me and feels remorse. He thus quickly becomes religious. He thinks, alas, alas, there's no person more fallen than me. I defile the reputation of the community of devotees. Damn me. Again and again, feeling remorse like this, he achieves complete peace and detachment. Well, one may say, if he actually becomes religious, there can be no argument about such a person. But what about a devotee whose behavior is wicked and who fails to give up his bad behavior throughout his whole life? what can be said about him? Always affectionate to his devotees, the Lord responds to this doubt with complete confidence and with some anger in the words beginning, Kauntiya Pratijaniki. My devotee never perishes. Even when he dies, he never falls down. To encourage Arjuna, who's disturbed with sorrow and apprehension over the thought that hard-hearted quibblers may indulge in false logic and not acceptance, the Lord says, "Oh, Kauntiya, go to the assembly of these disputants and, making a loud sound with drums and cymbals, raise your arms fearlessly and declare my promise. I, Krishna, am the Supreme Lord, and even if my devotee is wicked in his behavior, he will never perish. On the contrary, such a devotee is sure to become successful. Their bad logic will be shattered by this confident declaration. They will certainly take shelter of you as their guru." Such is the interpretation given by Sridhar Swami in his commentary. Someone may ask, but why doesn't the personality of Godhead himself make this promise? Why does he instead deputize Arjuna to promise? In the same way as the Lord will later say, "Without a doubt, you will come to me. I promise you this because you are very dear to me." Why doesn't he now say, "Kauntiya, I promise that my devotee will never perish"? Here is the answer. At that moment, the Lord was thinking, "I'm very affectionate to my devotees. I cannot tolerate their being discredited at all. I will often break even my own promise and let myself be discredited to protect my devotees' promise. For example, I will soon fight with Bhishma and discard my own promise in order to protect Bhishma's promise." Thus, atheistic, logical quibblers will only laugh if I now offer my own promise, but they will have to acknowledge Arjuna's promise as if it were written in stone. Therefore, I will have Arjuna make this promise. Thank you. Any questions?
Sometimes one tends to cite this verse for one's own self. But the important section here is the remorse section.
Yeah.
And that's not always there. So...
yeah, we're not recommended. There's... what is that? To think that because I'm a devotee, I can do all this stuff and it's okay. That's very bad. Commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. That's very bad. But, so it's not for us to invoke that, well, sadhareva. But it's for us to see the other devotees that way.
Are you trying to say
that
even if a person is engaged in just illicit activities or sinful activities, if he's engaged in sinful activities, he's considered as being being situated? Could he be being situated if he's engaged?
Can he be well situated?
Being engaged in sinful activities?
Yes.
Yeah?
Krishna, it's not my saying. It's Krishna's saying.
It's kind of confusing, because if you go to the nectar of devotion, for instance, there are so many stages and so many different things that you have to do to really become a devotee. Then, in nectar devotion, you would think that a person engaged in illicit activities, he wouldn't be in a stage of a devotee, or he wouldn't be well situated. Then I would say he's well situated, although he's committing sinful activities.
That may be.
How come you understand that?
Yes. That may be rules and regulations. That may be the standard of sadhana. Certainly we can say his sadhana is not very good. You know, just because he regularly smokes marijuana at 7:30 every evening.
His sadhana may not be very good, but if his determination, the determination of his life is that I have to serve Krishna, then even though he's performing sinful activities, he has to be considered a sadhana. Prabhupada gave an example a long, long time ago. When Brahmananda Prabhu was the president at 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada said that even if you see Brahmananda walking down the street smoking a cigarette, you have to consider him Satan. He wasn't doing it, but Prabhupada was giving the example. That otherwise, what's the meaning of the verse? If we say, well, yeah, you can be a sadhu as long as you don't do anything against the rules and regulations, what does the verse mean? Sudurachar. Achar, our sadhu is achar, proper activity. Krishna says, even if you're doing durachar, even if it's sudurachar, he has to be considered a saintly person. If he has this one qualification only, that he's completely sold out to Krishna consciousness, I have to serve Krishna no matter what. I can think of some people. Gee, I have some godbrothers who look at their lives and, oh my God. You know, they're just like, oh my goodness. You know, how many regulative principles have they broken? You know, how badly and how often and so many things. But some of these people, they are just, they cannot get Krishna out of their hearts. You know, they do it and then they're, you know, whatever. They are stuck on Krishna consciousness. So you look at them and say, gee, this person's so unfortunate and this person is so, you know, blah. But he can't give up Krishna consciousness. He can't give up Krishna consciousness. So Krishna says, still he has to be considered a sadhu. See Krishna. If this is not a radical verse, what's a radical verse? Yes.
Now, based on your explanation, Krishna apparently is given some consideration. If this person is remorseful, and if he's sold out to determination to something.
Remorseful, he doesn't even say. He just says, if he's stuck on me. And, of course, the idea is, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, that if he's really a devotee, he'll feel remorseful. But then he says, that even if throughout his whole life, he doesn't give up these things, still you have to consider this. Real qualification is that he has this devotion to Krishna. He cannot imagine himself in any other situation than being a devotee of Krishna. Even if he does sinful things, he can't give up devotional service. Just like a gambler, you know, a gambler, whatever else he does, he can't give up gambling. You know, so wherever he goes, even if you see him dressed in a suit and tie and he's just being a real nice guy and everything else, you know the guy's a gambler. So this person, he's just a devotee. Even when he does this, he does that, he does the other thing. He's got all this, whatever it is, but he can't give up Krishna consciousness.
Ah, Maharaj, thank you very much. Now, the other point is, it's not a person. Yes, we have to consider him as based on Krishna's will. But, suppose he's in a position of leadership. Take for instance, he is a temple president. Or in a position of people having to emulate, or him having to lead others. What should be the attitude of the
still he's a sadhu. He may not be very good, very fit to be a manager.
Okay.
We have a lot of sadhus who aren't fit to be managers for lots of different reasons. It's not that a sadhu, you know, well, I know he's a thief and I know he's the treasurer, but he's a sadhu. That's not very astute. Put that sadhu someplace a little far away from your money. But still, he's a sadhu.
And I think.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Mark.
Isn't sinful activities contrary to devotion?
It is. Sinful activities are contrary to devotion. But still, Krishna says, even if he performs sinful activities, obviously it's contrary. You don't make a lot of advancement by performing sinful activities. It's harmful to devotional service to perform. But if you find a person, even if he's performing sinful activities, if he's stuck on devotional service, you have to consider him a sadhu. That's what Krishna is saying. That's what Krishna Chakravarti Thakur is saying.
But could someone really do sinful activities and devotional service at the same time?
What if he usurps other men's wives? No, I can't. I couldn't come up with something. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah, my hands are clean. I didn't write this. You know, he's our acharya. This is what he says. It's the purport. Yes.
The whole thing is samyag vyavasito kisa. Maharaj, he's saying he's stuck on Krishna. I know people who are like that, who are, they'll never give up alcohol. But here's the thing. Because there's some yagavati-dohisa, they don't make a philosophy out of alcohol. They're not nam-no-hi-valasya-hi-papa-buddhi. They're not sinning on the strength of that. They're very much, they know they're fallen. So they, Krista says they are to be considered the same. Now, Prabhupada, it's interesting that Prabhupada, in the last paragraph, which in English is always the last word, he balances things. And on the other hand, one should not misunderstand the devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connections. Now that accident or that habit, that might go on, as Krishna says, to his whole life. But he doesn't make a philosophy. Prabhupada gives the example of the thief. The thief, he's traveling with the people, and he just can't help himself. He's just used to stealing. So he gets up and he starts moving the bags around of his fellow travelers. And just, he's, okay, I can't steal, but like, I gotta do something, you know. I gotta move around. And then they wake up, and they, where's my bag? Oh, it's over here. And then the guy apologizes. I'm sorry. You know, I'm a thief. By nature, by profession, he says. But I had to do this. So I also have God brothers who, you know, they'll never give up. But they're not going to
be the same God brothers.
Here's what saves them. They'll never give up. They won't make a philosophy out of those sinful activities. They won't make a philosophy. They'll admit their fallen nature, and they're Krishna's man to the day they die, but they're addicted to that stuff, too.
Something in their background. Prabhupada explains that. That's generally our material nature and our spiritual nature sort of go together. We act in such a way that's congenial. It's okay, I have my spiritual life and I have my material life. I set up my material life in such a way that it helps me in my spiritual life, and everything goes on like parallel lines. But sometimes there's something in your material nature that just goes crosswise. You used to be addicted to alcohol, and somebody, you know, your old drinking buddy comes by and says, what's one night and a couple of whiskeys? And I just happen to have some right here. And because of your past background, you say, yeah, I guess it's only one and it's right here. And it's Krishna. Your material life and your spiritual life cross. And some people, they're like star-crossed, you know, they have this just heavy material background, they have these strong things in them that, you know, like very hard for them to deal with, but they also have this strong devotion to Krishna that they can't give up.
Yeah.
So then Krishna says, you have to consider them, consider him a sadhu.
Two things. Some of them might not be engaged in devotion to Krishna and might not identify themselves with the movement in an outspoken way. It's more an inwardly thing. They might not be engaged in any type of sadhana or come around or have any external forms of devotion. But still, they have performed service, so somehow they're connected.
Yeah, Krishna doesn't say, as long as he attends the temple programs,
he's considered a sadhu. Or as long as he's loyal to the GBC, he's considered a sadhu.
As
long as he doesn't do this, or as long as he does that.
He may not see anything conspicuous.
He's just, there he is. His inner life is something you don't know about. He's addicted to Krishna. And you look at it and you say, well, yeah, but he's not chanting 16 rounds, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. And
but what else he's doing?
He said, yeah, you don't know, this guy is, that was a nonsense. So, better be careful. Because Krishna says he's a sadhu. And we have something in our 10 offenses, in fact, the first something called sadhu nidda. And if you do sadhu nidda, you get a pot of water with the personality of Krishna. And it can destroy your devotional service. That is discussed on that hapte. Yes.
I was just thinking of Srila Prabhupada now completely and utterly, and he understood this point that Krishna is making in these two verses, and he applied it in dealing with all of us.
Could you give that a please?
I was just meditating on Srila Prabhupada and his acceptance and understanding of these two verses and the application in dealing with devotees who went through difficulties, didn't judge them.
Well, I wouldn't go that far to say that Prabhupada didn't judge. He's the spiritual master, and frankly, he could out-judgmentalize anybody. He could be more judgmental than the most judgmental. He wasn't a New Age, I feel your pain sort of guru who understood everybody and accepted them as they are, as the modern style has it. You are nonsense. Fool. There's no other word for you. What is the use of you? And it probably could be. He had no hard time making value judgments. Or letting you know about it. He said that's the duty of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is there just to say, oh, yes, yes. Anyway, you're such a sweet person. No. His duty is to correct. So Prabhupada was exceedingly judgmental, but then, you know, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, strong like, hard like the thunderbolt and gentle like the rose. Both sides. So Prabhupada could manifest either side. But we saw in Prabhupada's career that so many times someone might fall, but Prabhupada would not just reject the person. And Prabhupada would always, even, you know, he would remember that this person did such and such service. Or many examples where Prabhupada didn't just write somebody off because he'd made a mistake. Prabhupada didn't just write somebody off. Yes.
Maharaj, what about those who willingly commit Vaishnava Parath with the intention to hurt other devotees?
Better that you perform sinful activities than Vaishnava Parath. Sinful activities can be forgiven very easily. Vaishnava Parath is a very cultivated people.
And that's a distinction.
Vaishnava Parath can kill your whole spiritual life. Very serious business. Because the person that Krishna says, if he's my devotee, even if he does all this, I'll consider him a saintly person. And you're going to bad mouth that person. Or a person who's not like that, a person who's in good standing, you know, who's practicing, you're going to bad mouth that person. Boom, even if he did something sinful, Krishna would consider a sadhu. You're going to bad mouth. Good luck to you.
Smriti Bharat in this verse, Ananya Bharat and
Samyak completely.
These three words are not valuable in this verse, looks like.
Are not?
Valuable.
Are not valuable?
Yeah, I mean, because Prabhupada, in his translation, he did not take this Ananya Bharat, because Ananya Bharat means without division.
He says.
There?
Properly situated in his determination. That's the translation. It's not exactly dictionary translations, but it's there. There are no insignificant words in Bhagavad Gita. They're all, even the cha. Yes.
Maharaj, extending Prabhu's question, if somebody does Vaishnava Aparadha, then does it come under category of Sudurachara, and can he be considered as a sadhu?
Well, you know, I'm not the law court.
I don't make these decisions. You want to press your luck?
Krishna says, don't do it. It's exceedingly corrosive to devotional service. Your devotional service can become like the waning moon.
But the other devotees, should they consider him as a sadhu in that case? Because he's still attached.
Even he's a sadhu. He's a sadhu who's killing his spiritual life. But he's a sadhu.
Maharaj, when you're saying sadhu, the typical understanding in India is sadhu is a very highly elevated person. But Prabhupada says that in the end
these are highly elevated devotees. They, in India, sadhu, any, you know, one of these guys who leaves home and puts on a rag, he's considered a highly elevated person. And what to speak of a person who's a devotee of Krishna? He's the best of the sadhus. Samay yukta tamomata.
Even in the material world, there are certain criminal offenses which we don't want to mention, but even if people get put in jail, everybody says, like, this person would have better died than done this activity. So we should consider sadhuninda in that category. That is not something you can just, you know, go to jail for a couple of months and then get out on good behavior, get off easy. But it's actually something very grave.
Sadhuninda is very, very, very serious.
Is it because by his determination, all those sinful activities will stop?
Yeah, because he's serious. Kshipram bhavati dharma. But all right, something will, there'll be some discrepancy, maybe severe discrepancy for some time, but very quickly he'll come back to the stand because he's serious. And Vishnu says, oh, what have I done? He'll regret. And the Bhagavatam says all the sinful reactions are burnt up in the fire of repentance. Not that one goes on cavalierly. Well, we shouldn't take advantage. Yes.
We ourselves have our deep material misconceptions. And even though Krishna makes such a statement, it's very difficult for us to think in that way. So if we do make a mistake, how do we rectify it? Like if we do bad-mouth
sadhu. Bad-mouthing of sadhus, you have to beg forgiveness of the sadhu.
And if we don't remember,
then you're good. Then you're in misfortune. What you don't remember can still bite you. Better not to do it.
Shouldn't we see sadhus as
what kind of example is this? Stealing other people's wives.
Sadhu means
high class devotee, following all the principles, pure in his nature, pure in his character, 26 qualities of a devotee. That's a sadhu. That's actually a sadhu. Not that we. That's actually a sadhu. But even if a person who's a devotee is not doing those things, if he's doing the opposite things, still he has to be considered a sadhu. Not that we consider him an example, yes. I mean, after all, he's chanting Hare Krishna between every beer. That becomes the new standard for devotional service.
High standard.
Chanting Hare Krishna between each beer, so if he drinks 20 beers, he's
not, we shouldn't misunderstand it that way, that it means you can Shruti Smriti Puranadi Upataya Kalpate. A person who doesn't follow the rules and regulations is causing a big disturbance in the community of devotees. It's not that it's just fine and dandy. we have no discrimination and everything is as good as everything else and everybody is, but still he has to be considered a sadhu. Not the best of the sadhus in his behavior, not the example that we want to follow, but still we have to think, this person is a devotee, he'll quickly come to the standard.
So the reverse also is true, that that a person that's strictly in the society is following all the moral principles and everything, but is not Krishna conscious, so
he's useless.
He's useless.
Arava bhaktasya katomu hakuna. He's useless. We don't give him any credit. Nice guy in the material world. He's among thieves. He's a first class man. Devotee is a different category. How much Krishna is giving importance to the devotees? How much Krishna has love for his devotees? Yes.
Maharaj, while taking association, we have to discriminate.
Yes.
Then we start judging
the you have to judge. Rupa Goswami says, you should see who's where, you should see who you are, you should see who they are, and then you'll know how to relate with them properly. The Upadesha Amrita is about that. That's all right. We see this person is not following very nicely, this person is very advanced. Not that we can't, that we have to be like Mayavadis, that everything is one. We recognize this person is performing sinful actions, this person is disobeying the orders of the spiritual master, this person is showing bad character. Who's that? Either Baladeva or Vishwanath says that we honor such a person from a distance.
Yeah.
That if you see a Vaishnav whose behavior is bad, you respect him from a distance. That means you respect him from a distance. Not that we chum up with him and say, well, you're my kind of Vaishnav, you know. The guy who understands the value of other people's wives. That's not the idea. We'll keep him at a distance, but still we'll say, I have to respect him. One, he's chanting Hare Krishna. He can't give up devotion. I have to respect him. He'll come back. He'll come back to this thing. I can't consider him to be like an ordinary person.
Even if he is making offenses in a systematic way, is it considered chanting?
Systematic? What is systematic? Systematic.
He's using the mantra.
That's not very good. That's real bad. Better that he just be sinful than be sinful and chant Hare Krishna to get rid of his sinful reactions. He's going to make things difficult. So we recognize that. Sometimes you see people go on a real diet. I can think of one person. He left devotional service and began. He appeared on television, bad mouthing Prabhupada, and now he's back. You know, pure hearted and thoroughly regretful about having done such things. How's that?
That's Mahavaishnava.
But it was like the cloud that passes in the sky. It wasn't constitutional. Somehow or other, he went into a spin. Even went so far as bad mouthing Prabhupada, and then thought. Don't try it. Even so far.
Now, a person commits Vaishnava Linda, he is supposed to go back to that Vaishnava to beg for forgiveness. Now, Prabhupada is not even on the planet physically.
Well, Prabhupada is there for his devotees.
So how does he get rectified? By begging the several Vaishnavas?
That also. It's not, you have to be
consider how much credit a person has to have to come out on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. Consider how much credit a person must have to survive that, to come out on the other side of that. Devotee is not an ordinary human being. Vaishnava, Jati, Bhuti, Purushu, Naravati, Vaishnava, Jati, Bhuti. It's not just like the Ganga. You look at it, it's got all this junk floating in it. Don't look at it that way. It's different.
Alright, this started in the Goswami, the mad elephant fence can uproot the creeper and break it.
Yeah.
Is this an exception to the in this endeavor there is no loss or diminution?
It appears to be. You can
I've always wondered that.
You can certainly go through a lot of loss and diminution if you end up sadhus. Especially the spiritual master, that's sadhu ninda, disobeying the orders of the spiritual master. It's everything at once. So we don't misunderstand you that all these things are really just fine and kind of cruise along and a few simple activities here, a few simple activities there, and as long as you chant Hare Krishna, it won't protect you. These are grievous impediments. We're supposed to be able to take up devotional service when we've come to the end of sinful activities. But sometimes, somehow, when that material nature crosses one's spiritual life, such a thing may happen. And Krishna says, still it has to be considered so. So if we, you have a choice, you can take it or leave it. You can say this is too radical, I'm going to find another religion. Or you can accept what Krishna says.
In the last two sentences of his purport to this verse, Prabhupada turns the whole issue in two different ways.
Mm.
Even in the last two sentences, he's looking at it. And the two sentences are, no one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think that he is still a devotee. And then listen to the last sentence. If he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. He's still a devotee. He says, first he says he thinks that you're still a devotee, but still, he is a devotee.
Still he's a devotee.
Addicted to two things, simple activities and Krishna.
Simple activities in Krishna culture.
Maharaj,
you have a question? Or
I want to say something. As we are in Prabhupada's movement, our prime duty is to set a good example rather than bring in a Vaishnava dress and then go in the people, among the people who are not Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious, and then have no good sadachar, and then set a bad example and bring bad name to Srila Prabhupada. I feel that's one of the greatest offenses.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. Understand it clearly. There's no authorization here for performing sinful activities. Krishna's not saying, well, you know, a little wiggle room is okay. Everybody needs a little bit of a break now and then. Or, you know, I understand, I'll accept you as you are, and whatever you kind of do is not like that. It's very serious. You can do serious damage to your spiritual life. Damage from which, you know, how long will it take you to recover? So it's not an invitation to sinful activities. Well, here in the ninth chapter is my loophole. It's not meant for that. But it's meant for, on the other side, it's meant for understanding that this is also a fall down to think that such a person is not a sadhana. That means we're not on the highest stage. We're not on the actual stage of Krishna consciousness, or we wouldn't be under this misconception. We have to understand this person, even though he's committed a sinful activity, if he's stuck on the determination to serve Krishna, he has to be considered a sadhana. If we don't understand it, then that's our piece. That's also, then it becomes sadhu-ninda, and then what's happening to our, you know, we're trying to keep the highest standard. We have to maintain the highest standard here and not permit this lousy such and such and such and such, this pretender such and such and such and such, this so-called such and such and such and such, this son of a such and such. Okay, no. Hare Krishna. And then you can put Prabhupada's name in it. Yeah, for the sake of Prabhupada. We wish you well. So it's an advanced philosophy. It's not just a, you know, plug in a few pieces and do a few things and you got it. There's advanced thought here. There's deep concepts, there are deep realizations that are required. Krishna is saying something which is absolutely logical. And if you go too far one way, you're going to think, well, you know, life is one great big amusement park and Krishna's there to pay the entrance fee and get us out if we fall off the roller coaster. And if you go the other way, you'll be doing sadhu ninda and destroying the spiritual life. So we have to understand all these things soberly. Hear us, Dr. A sober person will not be bewildered one way or the other thing, or the other way.
Sorry, I have to be asking so much.
You never have to be sorry for asking for
that. How do you manage a situation like this under this board? Managing a temple, for example, the devotees are doing certain illicit activities, but they're engaged in devotional service. Even pujaris, let's say. And then, how could they allow them to live in the temple, or should they
be? They're two different things. Considering a person a sadhu and being managerially stupid are two different things.
No,
it's not that because a person is a sadhu, I have to be managerially fuzzy. I can be clear that this person, under the present circumstances, is not fit to worship the deity, or is not fit to be the treasurer, or is not fit to be the president, or whatever it is.
Or not fit to be in the temple.
Or not fit to be in the temple, even.
Okay.
It's not that everything is, well, sadhureva, and, you know, kicks back a six-pack every night, but it's a sadhu, and we have to let it stay in the temple. It's not like that. It's not like that. It doesn't mean that we lose our managerial discrimination. But, at the same time, it's not that we tell all the devotees, well, this person was, blah 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 blah. And how fast can you get it on the internet? I want that up there by 3:30 this afternoon. I was thinking something. I've seen examples. There was one person who was known to be deviated. He was the president of one of our temples, and people, they wanted to dump him. In fact, they did dump him. And Prabhupada came to the temple. Where is such and such? Well, Prabhupada, you know, we made such and such the president because this one wasn't following such and such and such. How do you know he wasn't following? Are you following? Prabhupada called him back. Now, it requires, you know, that's Prabhupada. But what is Prabhupada thinking? There you think, this person did so much service, and now he's gone away disappointed.
A whole community can get affected, and we hear that with the incident of Nityananda Prabhu, that the entire village was destroyed. So if you live in a place like Mayapur, good luck, because there's all sorts of stuff happening. So then what's the, you can just say, okay, let's just hit the road and go preaching, because I'll come back after the war, you know, like Balaram with the Kurukshetra war. But
what's our scope of creating communities which are based on Vaishnava behavior, and there's actually a conducive relationship and there is some progression there, if we see that this element of sadhu-ninda is so much present, especially nowadays in the whole culture of we're liberals and you have to address all the issues and everything has to be known and spoken about. And yeah, you have to know his past, what did he do over there before he moved over here, not even what he did before he was a devotee, but what he did as a devotee somewhere else. And then people get seriously disappointed and they move away and nobody's there to call him back, because there is not like a Prabhupada who will go and say, hey, get him back, and, you know.
Yeah, there's a bureaucracy, and all you need is one person to say, well, I think we should, you know, shouldn't be so fast.
Well, people just get, you know, give the dog a bad name and hang it, and they just get ostracized.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the whole place turns into a graveyard.
Therefore, Dhiras Chachanamuniti. The devotee has to be sober. The devotee has to be sober. Sober doesn't mean that he's lacking discrimination, and sober doesn't mean that he has no magnanimity. He has everything.
But should we object when such sadhu-ninda is taking place? Because then also we are making statements against the people who are doing the sadhu-ninda, and that's also...
There are different ways to object to sadhu-ninda. You don't have to call somebody bad names for doing sadhu-ninda. There are different things you can do. You can go away. You can defeat the person's arguments. Probably better not to cut out the tongues of Brahmins and Vaishnavas. But there are ways of dealing with sadhu-ninda. Not that we just have, if you sit there through it, you're doing yourself serious damage. You shouldn't sit there. And I can remember one time here in Mayapur, someone did, in a class, a big, big leader, did sadhu-ninda of a senior Vaishnava. Person has serious problems. Serious, serious problems. And quite a number of devotees have a good sense of just walk out.
Well, many have the policy, hey, I'm still walking, you know. I mean, there's not the lightning coming from the sky. I'm still trying Hare Krishna.
And we'll do a
scientific
scientific experiment, see how much sadhana you can do before the lightning strikes.
Yeah. I've heard this argument, it's like unbelievable.
Yes, quite interesting.
I'm still standing,
specimen.
I'm still walking.
I'm
plus
still
I got
around
these other five guys who think and say the same thing as I do, and they're all in positions of power, so that means we must be right.
We shouldn't use positions of power to do sadhu-ninda, and we shouldn't do sadhu-ninda on devotees in positions of power. We are overtime, of course. We're working overtime. Should you want me to stop? Should I stop? Do you want another question or two?
You got to find what sadhu-ninda is. For example, there was one devotee the other day who was complaining that this devotee was not managing properly. And when he was helping this devotee, he made this mistake and that mistake. Is that the same thing as sadhu-ninda? Or does there have to be a venom behind it?
Well, you should be careful. There is. It's not that we can't observe that there's a managerial discrepancy or a discrepancy in the service. We can't observe that this devotee burned the sweet rice and maybe needs some help. It's not that we become blind and foolish. That's not the idea. Blind, foolish, indiscriminate, reckless. Sometimes, the manager may need to know what the past of someone is so that the person doesn't do serious damage to the members of this community. That may sometimes happen.
But it doesn't put it on the internet.
Yeah, the internet is... Anyway, to listen to my other lecture for the internet. people are really screwing their spiritual lives on the internet. Either by putting it out or taking it in. Don't. Should be avoided. All right, I think I've held you long enough.
Thank you all very much.